World Cup Talk. Christina here with the storylines that matter most in football today. Pulisic being ruled out for the United States should have been the story that froze the American campaign for a day, but instead it became the story that revealed something bigger about this World Cup. Depth is suddenly as important as star power. The U.S. beat Australia 2-0 and still moved forward. And the result matters beyond one group table. It says that in a tournament this compressed, with travel, climate, and recovery all squeezing teams, the teams that survive are the ones that can absorb bad news without losing their identity. What made that more interesting was the timing. Reuters, ESPN, and the New York Times all confirmed the calf issue before kickoff, so there really was no mystery about the absence. The conversation then shifted from, can the U.S. replace Christian Pulisic, to, what does it look like when a co-host nation has to play a serious World Cup match without its emotional center? And the answer, at least for one night, was a little calmer and a little less romantic than people expected. They did not try to manufacture a hero shot every 5 minutes. They played with more discipline, more shared responsibility, and maybe a better understanding of what tournament football actually rewards. For me, that is the part worth sitting with. The modern World Cup keeps punishing teams that are too dependent on one star to solve every hard moment. If you are a fan, that is not always the most glamorous thing to hear, because we love the big face on the poster. But this tournament has a way of pulling the camera back. It asks about your bench, your pressing structure, your emotional stability, and whether your full squad understands the script when the headline name disappears. And that brings me to Canada. Because if the U.S. story was about surviving one major absence, Canada's story feels far more painful. Ismaël Koné's injury against Qatar has been described across BBC, ESPN, TSN, The Guardian, and Canada soccer coverage as a genuinely shocking moment, with surgery already completed and his tournament over. Canada won the match, and that should have been a historic emotional high. Instead, the football itself almost got pushed into the background by the sight of a young central player leaving on a stretcher and by the emotional reaction inside the squad afterward. This is exactly the kind of story a podcast should slow down for, because the impact is not just tactical, although the tactical hit is real. Koné gives Canada progression, control, and that ability to turn a transition phase into something more composed. But there is also a psychological dimension that is harder to quantify and impossible to ignore. When teammates say they want to finish the job for him, that can create togetherness, but it also creates weight. A tournament can become more meaningful and more fragile at the same time. There is a broader World Cup pattern here too. The list of injury-led conversations is getting longer. And that usually tells us something about tournament stress, match intensity, and how little margin there is between a dream run and a squad being reshaped overnight. Coaches and analysts can talk about rotation plans all they want, but sometimes a World Cup changes on one challenge, one awkward planting of the leg, one bad recovery step. Fans feel that instantly because it is the cruelest part of the event. The World Cup sells us euphoria. But every edition also reminds us how fast a personal dream can disappear. Away from the teams themselves, another thread getting louder over the last 24 hours is the fan experience, especially the money around it. Coverage from the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, Business Insider, MoneyWeb, and Britannica all points at the same tension from different angles. Ticket prices are rising, dynamic pricing is frustrating supporters, resale failures are leaving some fans stranded, and tourism in parts of the host footprint has not fully matched the early hype. That combination is fascinating because it shows how the World Cup can look sold out on television while still feeling financially awkward and uneven on the ground. The resale problem is especially worth discussing. When fans spend months planning flights, hotels, trains, and match day schedules, a ticket failure is not a small inconvenience. It blows up the whole experience. That is not just a consumer story. It becomes a tournament atmosphere story, a trust story, and even a fairness story. If the people who are most motivated to create noise in the stands are also the people most vulnerable to bad resale systems or fake listings, then the competition risks pricing out some of its best live energy. And there is a companion issue here: travel and local mobility. Kansas City announced transportation improvements ahead of another World Cup match. And that kind of reporting matters more than it may sound. Big tournaments are not only judged by goals and highlights. They are judged by whether fans can actually get to the stadium without chaos, whether the last train works, whether signage makes sense, whether the entire day feels like a celebration, or a logistical obstacle course. World Cups are sold as national showcases, but supporters experience them one train platform, one shuttle queue, and one security checkpoint at a time. I also think it is important to mention the scam warnings now circulating in fan coverage. Fraud around fake tickets, fake travel offers, and digital traps is exactly the kind of thing that grows when a tournament gets hotter and attention spikes. It may sound less dramatic than an injury bulletin, but for fans, it can be just as decisive. A supporter who loses money to a fake ticket has their World Cup ruined in a totally different way. And for organizers, repeated scam stories can quietly damage confidence even when the football itself is brilliant. Then there is the host city and stadium conversation, which has this strange split personality right now. On one side, you have admiring descriptions of atmosphere, spectacle, giant venues, and the feeling that the event really has arrived. On the other, you have recurring concerns about suitability, local conditions, and whether every host experience really matches the promise. That contrast is healthy to talk about because World Cups are never one thing. They are always a moving argument between image and reality. When people rank stadiums or rave about the vibe, they are talking about one version of success. When local outlets talk about transport upgrades, weather issues, or infrastructure pressure, they are talking about another. Both are real. And the tournament's reputation is shaped by the combination. Fans remember a great goal, but they also remember whether the stadium felt too remote, whether the heat was draining, whether the route home was miserable, whether the city felt ready for the scale of the moment. One last point from today's cycle. Even when the results are straightforward, the media framing around them is doing a lot of work. In the U.S. story, some outlets pushed the resilience angle, some pushed the missing star anxiety, and some immediately pivoted to knockout stage odds. In Canada's case, some coverage centered the sporting achievement, and others centered the emotional aftermath of Kone's injury. Neither choice is wrong, but it does shape what fans feel is the true headline. That matters, because the World Cup is never just a list of facts. It is also a battle over which facts become the emotional center of the day. So if I had to boil down today's World Cup mood, I would put it this way. This tournament is starting to reveal its real price. The price for teams is depth, composure, and physical durability. The price for fans is money, planning, and a willingness to navigate an event that can be magical and exhausting in the same breath. And the price for organizers is that every weakness gets magnified under global attention. That is why today feels bigger than a collection of separate headlines. Pulisic's absence showed how quickly a team's identity gets tested. Kone's injury showed how fast joy can turn into concern. Ticket and transport stories showed that fan experience is part of the competition, whether governing bodies like it or not. And the host city conversation reminded us that the World Cup is always being played in two arenas at once, on the pitch and in the lived reality around it. If those themes keep building over the next few days, this could become a World Cup defined less by one superstar and more by who handles pressure best, from squads to cities to fans themselves. See you tomorrow.